Today we begin a three-part series called Inventing Peace. In the wake of 9/11, the Second Gulf War, and a global anti-war movement calling for peace, German filmmaker Wim Wenders and Australian philosopher and writer Mary Zanazzi struck up a friendship. Wim and Mary exchanged letters and stories over the course of 10 years, searching for ways to reinvent what they call a visual and moral language for peace. These conversations formed a book and are presented on Radiotonic as a three-part series of essays. Today, part one. Here's Mary Zanazzi and Wim Wenders.
Inventing Peace.
A dialogue on perception.
Much of our everyday thinking and language is bereft of how to imagine and talk about peace. When I ask friends and family how they would imagine peace, the common responses are, peace is the absence of war or the state of harmony in between times of conflict. Something idealistic and even boring, but more often than not, something that is unattainable, a fantasy. In many ways, our book, Inventing Peace, is a response to the question, what is peace and how can we imagine it? Our book comes out of a specific historical context as well as a chance encounter. I'll tell a story of how Wim Wenders and I met and how we came to consider this question of peace. Encounters. On the eve of the Second Gulf War in 2003, much of the world divided itself along the lines of good versus evil, war versus peace. The repercussions of 9/11 were still felt as the sequence of events unfolded, and public dialogue and any hopeful diplomacy had evaporated. A moral sensibility and vocabulary of what peace might mean was absent from the public debate, just as much as it had been largely absent from history. This made me realise how much we structure public debate and argument like battlefields, without any space for genuine dialogue. It seemed to me that for real events to touch us deeply, they must resonate for us in direct and meaningful ways. The language and sensibility of peace had yet to be invented. Everything seemed bleak at the time, but my thoughts turned to a new project, peace. I didn't know what peace might mean, but I knew it was necessary. I was looking for some way to kickstart the project, and it came. The German film director Wim Wenders was visiting Sydney to give some talks and in preparation for his photographic exhibition, Pictures from the Surface of the Earth. He was a guest on a national radio program, and by chance I heard the last part of his hour-long interview as he reflected on his interest in peace. Wim's radio presence was a gift. This was our first encounter. The project was born out of this moment in time and from our mutual interest in peace.
I remember at one point we wanted to call it Reinventing Peace. And then we realized it wasn't really so much to be reinvented. It had to be thought from scratch. Peace has got such bad press that we realized maybe we have to work on how it's received and how it's perceived in order to be able to even start talking about peace again. Maybe we have to first, for a while, talk about the conditions we perceive it in and see it and hear it and live with it. And
I mean, one of the things is when we did start the conversations and the dialogues, they were malversations or email letters that we were writing to each other. And that was one way of starting to get things happening and starting to communicate about this stuff. And I think what ended up happening as well was we were both influenced by the philosopher and theologian Martin Buber. For me, his idea of I-Thou, which is just being with others, learning how to be with others, became quite an important framework. And I guess for him, Martin Buber's ideas are something about being able to listen, being able to observe, and being able to look, but in a different way that's not inflected by harm or destruction or something like that. What do you think, Vim?
Yeah, making things exist because you look and hear and listen. And realizing that anything of any value will not be just fabricated by somebody, but will exist because it happens between me and you, between one and the other. And that only in that relation anything can shape up that might then eventually be valuable and might eventually be called peace.
Over the years, this strange calling of angels, the sacred and peace, resonated with me through Rilke's poetry, just as it did for Vim in the making of the 1987 film, Wings of Desire. The opening sequence of Rilke's Duino elegies declares,
Wer, wenn ich schrie, hörte mich denn aus der Engel Ordnungen und gesetzt selbst es nähme einer mich plötzlich ans Herz.
Who, if I cried, would hear among the angels' orders? And even if one of them pressed me suddenly to his heart, I'd be consumed in his potent being.
Ich verginge von seinem stärkeren Dasein, denn das Schöne ist nichts als des schrecklichen Anfang, den wir noch gerade ertragen.
For beauty is nothing but the beginning of terror, which
und wir bewundern es so,
we can still barely endure,
weil es gelassen verschmäht, uns zu zerstören.
And while we stand in wonder, it coolly disdains to destroy us.
Ein jeder Engel ist schrecklich.
Every angel is terrifying.
Of course, it wasn't up to Mary and me to come up with a new concept of peace. But the necessity for its reinvention was a big realization for us, the very starting point for our collaboration. The challenge for our book was obvious: how to even reflect about peace from scratch, how to offer it to creative imagination again. I had never given the notion of peace much thought. I just always took it for granted that there was a common understanding of what peace was. We probably all assume that it is such an obvious idea shared by all of humankind that we didn't notice how it evaporated in front of our eyes. I remember I always got angry every time when President Bush used the word peace in his speeches, the word freedom as well, backed by those politics. It all meant its sheer opposite. Politicians have that way of making not only words meaningless, but language as such. They have a way to make words so devoid of their original significance that they become empty shells that actively hide how and why they can possibly concern us. You'd really need a child to pronounce peace again, or a poet to use it. But poets have given up using such big words. They really don't have any other choice. And for children, it's too obvious a need to name it. Sometimes to hear peace pop up in a song or to see it spray painted on a wall makes it echo somewhere deep in our bodies. Mary and I try to look for the traces of those echoes. We don't have an answer for the peace question. We just looked at it from many sides, hoping that some of our approaches might tempt you to try and follow them, offer you new angles and associations, or give you reasons to disapprove at least. Anything at this point we felt that fills the word with some new taste, that makes it reappear in front of your inner eye, or that gives you a longing for wanting it to reverberate somehow in your imagination, in your everyday life. Anything was helpful to reanimate the peace process in our minds. And we had to sit on one table in between, you and me, I and thou, Mary and Wim, and look each other in the eye and come to terms with everything we had thought and said, and make it real by being face to face.
Yeah, and I think it's that encounter, that face to face, and that it's, I suppose it's that in between is actually in itself a kind of a presence and a time that is a different kind of time to how we normally live our lives. For us, inventing peace is making peace visible in a new way. Usually war and peace are seen as the opposite of each other. There's either war or peace. In this we can hear the echo of George Orwell when he wrote that the great propaganda machines of the 20th century have claimed war as peace and peace as war. It's even more amplified in the 21st century. Perhaps the greatest obstacle to peace is the fear of peace, the fear of uncertainty. Since most of us have no adequate moral or visual vocabulary for peace. But the fact is that war and peace arise from a common source or problem. That is, how to address violence. The opposition of war and peace tends to be the norm in our thinking and morality, but this is a badly stated problem. It's necessary to acknowledge the oppositional structures of war and peace that frame so many of our cultural habits. But rather than repeating these habits of mind and memory, we must pose new questions. What is peace, and how do we invent it?
Our book, Inventing Peace, is an invitation to think along, to enter our dialogue and make it a flowing exchange of ideas, to look at the perception of peace and to contemplate what it can mean to you, and maybe to you and us only. Thinking together made us realize how much of the peace process only emerges out of a common effort. Mary, being from Australia and me from Germany, seemed to be a symbolic gesture for such an invitation, we felt. We come from different parts of the world, almost from antipodes, at least geographically speaking. Mary traveled to Berlin for some of our encounters. I traveled to Australia on several occasions, and we met in different in-between places like Los Angeles, Montreal, Tokyo, Toronto, and Joshua Tree. And then we were also a woman and a man, not to overstate that fact. We all know how gender is always a mixture of conditions, not just a single propensity. But I feel very strongly that any actual peace process on this planet, political, sociological, ethical, needs to involve women in a big way. It bothers me deeply to see any congregation of politicians and start counting the few, if any, women in the pack. It bothers me even more when I look at Israel and Palestine. Sometimes I just want to shout, give all these men a rest and let the women step in. That alone might not be a solution, but male pragmatics have proved for too long to be the wrong approach to peace, or even worse, to have blocked access to it. Unblocking that access is the hope for our book.
There's something, I think, very precious in that space between people in which something can emerge, something can be said, and something can be understood, I guess, or maybe not understood, but there's something in that relationship. And I think that comes out in the book, but it's also part of an attitude, I think, of peace, of being able to hear and to be in that relationship with others, even if you can't necessarily fix a problem, or even if you don't really understand that person either. There's something very, very important in that configuration.
And I think time needs to be invested if you want to talk about or if you want to deal with peace. Peace is something that needs time. And even in politics, and even if you look at the history, peace doesn't come from one day to another because war ends and now you have peace. Peace is something that needs time.
Inventing peace is a method or technique we can use to change how we see ourselves and others. It's an ethical approach to imagine the world differently, a sacred means to help redress the limits of our vision.
Martin Buber, our hero, when he was awarded the prestigious Peace Prize of the German book trade, he spoke of what he called the Great Peace. What he said was all the more astonishing if you consider the year was 1953 and the world was just at the brink of the Cold War. The following is an excerpt from that speech. The Great Peace is something essentially different from the absence of war. In an early mural in the town hall of Siena, the civic virtues are assembled. Worthy and conscious of their worth, the women sit there, except one in their midst towers above the rest. This woman is marked not by dignity, but rather by composed majesty. Three letters announce her name, Pax. She represents that great peace I have in mind. This peace does not signify that what men call war no longer exists now that it holds sway. That means too little to enable one to understand the serenity. Something new exists, now really exists, greater and mightier than war, greater and mightier even than war. Human passions flow into war as the waters into the sea, and war disposes of them as it likes. But these passions must enter into the great peace, as ore into the fire that melts and transforms it. Peoples will then build with one another with more powerful zeal than they have ever destroyed one another. The Sienese painter had glimpsed the majesty of peace in his dream alone. He did not acquire the vision from historical reality, for it had never appeared there. What in history has been called peace has never in fact been aught other than an anxious or an illusory, blissful pause between wars. But the womanly genius of the painter's dream is no mistress of interruptions, but the queen of new and greater deeds. There is a time for everything. Times for peace are in the middle of the night, in the darkest hour, at the break of dawn, at sunrise, early in the morning, all morning long, later in the morning.
Later in the morning.
During the day.
During the day.
In broad daylight.
At high noon.
In the middle of the day.
Early in the afternoon.
Early in the afternoon.
In the sunny afternoon.
In the sunny afternoon.
Later in the afternoon.
Later in the afternoon.
At dusk.
At dusk.
At sunset.
At sunset.
When night falls. In the evening.
In the evening.
Late in the evening.
Late in the evening.
At night.
At night.
At midnight.
At midnight.
Late at night.
And so on and so on.
Inventing Peace was produced by Mary Zanazi with Vim Wenders. The sound engineer was Stephen Tilley and supervising producer Julie Shapiro. You can find more reflections in Mary and Vim's book, Inventing Peace, A Dialogue on Perception.